This is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.
And welcome one and all to the Friday edition of Game Misconduct. I'm Don LaGreca. Of course, the one game last night was Game 1 of the Eastern Conference Final, and it goes to Boston 5-2. This is a tale of like three different games, all right? The beginning of the game, Boston comes out of nowhere, 2:55 in, gets a goal from Stephen Kuemper out of nowhere. You know, and playing in his second playoff game so far this year, gets his first goal. He's left wide open. Great play by Johansson to find him in the slot, and he scores the goal to give Boston the 1-0 lead. But then Carolina gets a power play opportunity. Sebastian Aho scores on that power play like 3 seconds in to the man advantage. This after Carolina had gotten one for their previous 24 on the power play, tied at one. Then Greg McKegg gets his second of the postseason. That comes midway through the second period, drives towards the net, bangs into Rask, but you could see the goal, the puck went in before the contact with the goaltender, and I believe it was Krejci who drove McKegg into the goal anyway, so I think it was the right call. So here's Carolina again, spots Boston an early lead, but they come back and they take the 2-1 lead into the third period. What's interesting is here's Carolina with 8 wins in the postseason, courtesy of their 2 victories in the first 2 rounds, and only 3 times had they had the lead going into the third period. That's how many times they were tied or had to come back to win the games, especially in that Washington series, and they did it in, if you remember, Game 2 against the Islanders, where they were down a goal, scored twice in Brooklyn to take a 2-0 series lead. That was after Game 1, in which they were scoreless going into overtime. So only 3 times had Carolina had a lead. This was the 4th time, and they were 3-0 in the games in which they had that lead going into the second period. It looked pretty good, but then penalty trouble. Remember, Boston's power play hadn't been great either. 3-for-19 in the series against Columbus, and they had misfired on their first 2 power play opportunities in this game. But then they take advantage, scoring 2 goals in 28 seconds on the power play. Marcus Johansson gets his second point. That tied the game at 2. And then Patrice Bergeron right away scores his 6th of the postseason, and that gave Boston a lead they would never relinquish. Empty netter by Coyle, which people were wondering why was it credited to Coyle when he wasn't the one that touched the puck, but he would have gotten to the puck and put it into the empty net if he had not been held up by Sebastian Aho. So if that puck would have went wide and not gone in, they would have awarded Boston the goal anyway. So they credit Coyle with the goal, and then Wagner ends up beating Mrazek for a goal just 11 seconds later, and that would make it a 5-2 game. And I guess if there's some quote-unquote controversy around Carolina, is that was it a mistake going back to Mrazek when Curtis McElhaney had done such a great job? And certainly Mrazek can't be completely faulted for the goals that he gave up, but he still gave up 4 in the game, and then gave up the back-to-back goals in the third period as Carolina blows the lead. Would McElhaney have played better? McElhaney did a great job, but if you're an organization and you just believe that someone is your starting goaltender, then maybe you shouldn't be swayed from that. Mrazek was not benched because he wasn't playing well. Mrazek was benched because he was hurt. And then McElhaney finished what he had to start in the Islander series. But if you believe that Mrazek's your guy, then I guess you go back to him. I'm not sure it would have been that much of a different outcome. Matter of fact, I'm not even really sure Boston played all that well. If you listen to yesterday's podcast where I made my prediction, I thought Boston was going to win in 5. I think Boston's better than Carolina. Now, that's not to take anything away from the Hurricanes. They're a terrific team. They really are. And Slavin is just somebody you really have to pay attention to. He is a great defenseman. He's all over the place. Tremendous talent for sure. And Carolina deserves to be where they are. I mean, they matured, they became the team that they are, and they belong to be in the Final Four. I just think Boston's better, and they've got the home ice advantage. And I was doubting myself going into the third period. Boston did not play great, was not great on the power play. They weren't getting any shots on the power plays that they did have early on. But they came to play in the third period. They really did. And that was a missed opportunity by Carolina. And I wonder, when you're the underdog and you miss an opportunity like winning Game 1 on the road, when you got a lead going into the third period, you wonder if Boston, that's experienced, will take advantage of this and then just end it for Carolina. So the Hurricane, that storm, at least was stopped after 6 consecutive postseason wins. It comes to an end with a loss. But putting all that aside, if they can get the game coming up on Sunday, so they get a couple of days off, one of the rare situations where you get 2 days off without travel, maybe this will rest up the Hurricanes a little bit, devise another game plan, get the split in Boston, and then everything is going to be okay. Go back to that great building in Carolina and what in essence would be a best of five series and still a lot of hope. But losing two in a row, even though that's exactly what they did against Washington, would probably get you to think against this really good Boston team. So let's keep an eye on it. Extra day off, as I mentioned. That also helps the Boston Bruins, who had to go, you know, seven games with Toronto, had to go six games with Columbus. So they've got some older players like Krejci, Chara, and even Rask, who's been around for a while. You realize this is the first time these two teams have met in 10 years. So the last time Carolina made the playoffs was in 2009, and Carolina beat Boston in the second round to go to the conference finals. They beat them in seven games. It was Scott Walker's overtime goal that won it for Carolina. And there are four players from that Boston team that are still on this team 10 years later. Bergeron, Krejci, Chara, and Rask. Rask didn't play in that series because he was the backup to Tim Thomas. But it just shows you the length on some of these careers with the Bruins, where there's 10 guys that were on that team from 10 years ago. Carolina didn't have any players. Justin Williams was on that Hurricanes team, but was traded midway through to Los Angeles, and Rod Brind'Amour was on the team. He's now the coach. So Carolina's a little younger team. Boston can use the rest, and then Carolina can use it for the adjustment, but we'll see what happens on Sunday in a pivotal game too. Off day from the National Hockey League today, kind of rare. We don't have a game at all, but we'll be set up for the weekend on Saturday and Sunday with the game. Sunday, as I mentioned, Carolina-Boston, and then Saturday will be the start of the Western Conference Series between St. Louis and San Jose. I had a chance to work last night's game for Westwood One between Boston and Carolina, and my second intermission guest was Brett Hedekin. Now, Brett was a defenseman for that Carolina team back in 2006, now working as a radio analyst with Dan Rusinowski in San Jose with the Sharks, and he told me he's concerned about the number of games the Sharks have had to play. Now, they've only played one more game than St. Louis has, but San Jose's got some banged up players. You know about Pavelski. Obviously, Burns has been banged up. Carlson's been banged up. And you've got a Joe Thornton, who's a little bit older too. So a lot of older players on the team. And he did say he was concerned. 14 games, three of those 14 came in overtime. They had to come back from 3-1 down against Vegas in the first round. They had a double overtime game against Vegas in that game six. You remember, played the game seven in overtime, had to play game six in overtime against Colorado. So the extra day certainly going to help the San Jose Sharks. But I think St. Louis is ready. I mean, St. Louis is deep offensively. I think Tarasenko is going to get going here after just one even strength point in the last series against Dallas. There is some concern, though, around Binnington. You just wonder. He's inexperienced. I thought he got saved by the fact that the Blues were so offensive against Dallas, especially in that Game 7 where Binnington really wasn't tested. And Jones, I think, has been the better goaltender overall experience-wise, and why wouldn't he? He's been in this league for a while, and Binnington literally made his National Hockey League debut this season midway through. But I still think the Blues will win. I think it'll be a seven-game series. I think it's going to be a classic, and it'll begin on Saturday from San Jose. So it should be a pretty good contest there, and looking forward to the rest of these playoffs as it's really been a lot of fun. Let's hear from you to close out the week. At Don LaGreca, hashtag Game Misconduct. Troy says, throughout the playoffs, you have mentioned agitators in the league, and I could think of only a few. I could think of a few from each division except for the Central. Is there any player who fits that role from that division? Thanks for reading my tweet. Great question. Central Division pest. Oof. Let's see. Let me just take a look here, because you don't want to forget about teams that haven't gone to the playoffs, because it seems like it was 100 years ago since the regular season came to an end. The Central Division, which I think is the best division for sure. Yeah, not that I can really think of. You're right. Is there anybody on Dallas? I mean, Zouk is not a pest. I mean, Zouk is a pest because he scores, but I wouldn't call him a guy that's overly feisty. I'd really have to think about it. Winnipeg. I know Bufflin. He's a very physical guy. He can be nasty, but I'm not really sure I would put him on the pest level for sure. Nashville. Nobody that really jumps to mind. Good question. I'd have to think about it a little bit more. There has to be some agitators. Just thinking Minnesota. It's been a while since we've really thought about them. Chicago as well is a team that has kind of been out of the public eye since they didn't make the postseason either. So that's a great question. I have to think about it. Don't really think, just looking at the roster for the Chicago Blackhawks, no, I wouldn't really say there's anybody at that kind of a level. It's tough to do. It's tough to be that in the National Hockey League. But it's interesting the correlation between the lack of that type of player and the depth in which that division is, where I mentioned Nashville, Winnipeg, St. Louis, Dallas, Colorado, all playoff teams this year. Chicago and Minnesota were not eliminated till late in the year. And of course, Chicago and Minnesota have been perennial playoff teams until recently. So I guess it begs the question, is that needed considering how great that division has been? John says, I am no Marchand fan, but you killed him for the post-game interview. And I agree until I saw the same reporter attempt a cheap shot in an early interview. Do you still think Marchand was wrong? I think the reporter deserves the same criticism. Thoughts? Again, the reporter's name is escaping me, and he's up in Canada in Sportsnet. What you're saying is he mentioned the chopping of the Cam Atkinson's stick with his skate. I think he meant it tongue in cheek. All right, but even if you were to say that the reporter was out of line, then Brad, don't do the interview. Nobody's forcing you to do the interview. Believe me, I've worked in those situations before. PR directors are paid to protect the players. They're paid to promote the sport and make these players available, but they also protect the players. So Brad knows who's going to interview him at the end of the game. So obviously he wanted to send a message how aggravated he was, but it just comes across as bad for him, bad for the team, bad for the league. Don't do the interview. So I still will side with Marchand being a bad guy for even doing the interview. If you got a problem with it, I think he was a little bit overly sensitive, but whatever. I just think that if you have a problem with whoever's interviewing you, rather than make a spectacle of it, just decline the interview. Nobody would have known about it, and it wouldn't have made you look bad and wouldn't make the team look bad. Dave says, hey, Don, I watched some of the IIHF World Championships, and even when premier teams were playing, the audience makes a Florida game look like Woodstock. There's just nobody there. If that's the case, who is funding this tourney and why? It'll get bigger as things go. I mean, the times are so kind of like when you look at the NCAA tournament, right? There are games in the afternoon, and we all know how big the NCAA tournament is, and yet nobody's in the building. There are only certain teams that I think are draws. There are certain games that are at times that aren't convenient for people. I think that's probably the main reason why. But I've always wondered with the World Championships, it's coinciding with playoffs and now the Stanley Cup Final. It's been going on forever. But as far as the funding for it, obviously it makes money. Otherwise, they wouldn't continue to do it. But I do think that scheduling and who's playing sometimes does lead to the fact that there's nobody in the building. But I think once they get to the championship level, I think the building certainly will be filled. Forever TH says, is it sad that most people are using the officials as the main excuse for losing games in these playoffs? It's the worst I've seen fans say in a long time. Sometimes your team just stinks and you don't take advantage. I'm glad you're taking that tact. That's the tact I've taken for a long time, and I get killed for it on the air when I say the officials do not determine the outcome of a game, and I get ripped saying, well, if they didn't call that 5-minute major on Vegas, then they wouldn't have scored those 4 goals and Vegas would have won the game. So how can you say the officials don't have something to do with it? Well, they don't most of the time, because a lot of things happened before the game where Vegas could have had more than a 3-0 lead. Vegas came back and they tied the game after the 5-minute major. They had overtime to still win the game. So how do you blame the officiating? All right? You have to sometimes take it upon yourself to realize that you've got to fight through the bad calls and fight through the bad bounces. To me, it's a loser's lament. The teams and the fan bases that blame the officials and blame the bad bounces and blame the bad breaks are just the teams that weren't good enough to fight through them. The championship caliber teams understand that there are going to be obstacles that are placed in front of them. And the best teams of the world are the ones that can leapfrog over those obstacles, whether it's a bad call, whether it's a bad bounce, whether it's an injury. Fact is that you control your own destiny. Don't point fingers and blame it on everybody else. I understand the fans get upset, and I get upset too. I got in this business because I was a fan. But it's interesting how we only look at it through the colored glasses of the teams that we root for. I bet you if you looked over on the San Jose side, they probably could have said a lot of calls that went against them in that Vegas game, because they're looking at it through the teal glasses, and you were looking at it through the yellow and black and silver glasses of the Golden Knights or whatever team that you happen to root for. But I'm with you. I've been doing NHL Live, I remember, all those years, and EJ and I, or Jim Cerny and I, whoever's I was doing the show with, Neil Smith, all the guys I did the show with, Billy Jaffe, we would just take a bunch of phone calls from fans irate about the bad calls from the night before. But somebody's got to win a championship, and you tell me the team that won the championship got every call, got every break? Of course not. They did a better job of being able to navigate through those breaks than you did. Chris says, hi, Don, if you're Carolina, do you take a glass half full approach to game one because they had the lead after two periods of play, or half empty because they had an opportunity to steal game one and lost? I look at the glass half empty for a couple of reasons. Number one, you had the lead going to the third period. You had been undefeated in those situations, and I believe Boston had not won when losing after two periods of play. Also, I don't think Boston played their best game. I think Boston can make a lot of adjustments and actually play better. I think you will look back, if this series ends up being a long one and Carolina loses, we'll look back at game one and say that was a game Carolina should have had and maybe won the series. If they get swept, it's not going to matter anyway. But I look at it as the glass half empty. That was a game that could be had, and they didn't take advantage of it. And I think that's something that that's going to stick with them, especially if this ends up being a close series. Finsanity says, Don, seems like a good time for a Friday top five. Five Colorado, four Carolina, three St. Louis, two San Jose, one Boston. Thanks for the show. We listen every day. Well, thank you. We stopped doing the top five because we were in the playoffs, but you know what? That's pretty good. That's absolutely good. You got to have the four teams that are in the final four. And in Colorado, they went right down to the edge, right? They went to game seven and lost. I think Dallas could be in that conversation as well. Although I think the Avalanche, were slightly better than Dallas, but that could certainly be a conversation. So good job out of you there. Kevin says, hey, Don, random question, and I'll admit a bit shameless, but going to shoot my shot here. I'm a professional, comedy writer, filmmaker, and diehard Ranger fan, lifelong hockey fan in general, and I'd kill to write for the NHL awards. Okay. I will try to find out some information on who you can send that information to. And maybe you can send something over. I don't know if they have, I'm sure they do have writers, but I really honestly don't know the answer to that question. I will try to find out for you. Christina says, when you're talking about not liking the NHL being talked about for the wrong reasons, it reminds me of the Bertuzzi hit from years ago. I cringe when people talk about hockey with reference to only that. I am so with you, Christina, and thank you for this tweet, because as a hockey fan and a hockey announcer and a hockey talk show host doing this podcast and other shows, it does bother me when I'm doing a general talk show and the stereotypical stuff comes out about hockey. You can't pronounce the names. You can't see the puck on television. There's too much fighting. Everybody makes the playoffs. I was watching a San Francisco Giant game the other day, and they were promoting the Sharks being in the postseason. And one of the announcers says the hockey playoffs, they just never end. It's the longest playoffs. It just never ends. It's exactly the same format as the NBA. As a matter of fact, the NBA goes longer because they have more days off in between than the NHL. But it's the same stereotypical, the playoffs are too long, they never end. So, and then when you do get into conversation, and I remember working on the Michael Kay show at the time, we don't talk any hockey, and then Todd Bertuzzi goes after Moore and almost kills him, and all of a sudden we do an hour of hockey, and the violence of hockey, and how they should get rid of fighting, and it is irritating, it is. It seems like whenever, you know, hockey's completely ignored, but when there's a brawl or something controversial happens, then it gets to the forefront. It does frustrate me, Christina, but we love the sport, we know the sport, and we can't necessarily worry about what other people think. I understand that's very difficult to do, but that's life. All right, we've got a couple of games coming up this weekend. Of course, Saturday, the Western Conference Final begins. That's tomorrow between the Sharks and the Blues. Sunday, Game 2 between the Hurricanes and the Boston Bruins. Monday, we'll be back with the podcast, and we'll have EJ Raddick on, of course. And then Monday, I'll be doing the pre and post for Game number 2 between the Sharks and the Blues in the Western Conference Final. I'll do the pre and post for Westwood One, which you usually can find on Sirius XM 91, and you can find it on westwoodone.com and on the NHL app, too, if you want to hear that. So I'm looking forward to that. It was great working with Billy Jaffe and Sam Rosen and Darren Pang last night. Looking forward to working with the gang coming up on Monday when I shift gears over to the Western Conference Finals. So back with EJ on Monday. This was the Friday edition of Game Misconduct. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Thanks for listening to the Game Misconduct Podcast. Looking for more Don LaGreca? Hear him on the Michael K. Show weekdays from 3 to 7 p.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York. And worldwide on the ESPN app. And don't forget to subscribe to the Game Misconduct Podcast on the ESPN app, Google Play Music, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.